Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 136. This is Kevin DeFrango. To my left is Ken Phillips. What is going on, good sir?
Well, it's been a pretty good week, I'd say. The wife and I have been spending a little more time together since our daughter has gone off to camp this week. So that's been fun. We had a little picnic yesterday. Good times for that.
Nice.
Yeah, pretty fun stuff.
Ken the Romantic comes out on episode 136.
That's right. But yeah, other than that, I've been catching up on Attack on Titan, Kevin. I don't think we've talked about that at all. But
dude, I'm so I'm cool with this being a topic all by itself. Because I just watched, because I'm watching on Cartoon Network.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the most recent episode. If there are more out there in the ether, I haven't seen them.
Okay.
Yeah. So I will put it that way. Like, have you seen the whole is the whole season available somewhere?
Is
it just coming out weekly on,
From what I've seen, there was like two more episodes, I think, left in the season.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well,
so I'm not exactly sure where that is, but I think that was all that was available on the my YouTube TV. I set it up to record. It has like a DVR option to record the show. So that's as far as I've seen. I don't know, unless something's wrong with my recording. But
okay, cool. So. I guess spoiler alert for people that maybe haven't gotten to it already.
Yeah, and if you haven't, you should probably check it out. Although, I will say,
yeah,
to be fair, I have spoiled myself on Attack on Titan. It's one of those things where, for some reason, I will just go ahead and read ahead on, like, Wikipedia and get, like, the plot details from, like, the manga in Japan or something.
You can't even go out and get the manga.
That's right. I just want to download the pertinent plot points directly, like a freak. So I guess
I do not search them out, but I was having a hard time . My coworker was right. I was texting him. I watched two episodes of Archer back to back, and then I watched Attack on Titan, and then I went to bed, and I'm like, man, I really should have watched this before I watched Archer, because that was a fucking bummer, because I can't believe they killed off Armin.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I was like, oh, my fucking God, man. Like, I was so bummed. I'm like, he's kind of freaking out in the moment, but then he finally comes up with a plan to save them.
Well, you know, yes, that was a pretty intense moment, I would say.
Especially since he had a Raiders of the Lost Ark moment and just slowly melted, his skin just melted off of his skeleton.
Right. And ironically, I guess I should say I was not spoiled on that point before I watched the episode, so that was, for me, still a bit of a shocker to see, so that was pretty intense. Although, you know, just a speculation here, it seems like Levi did have a syringe of the Titan juice. So I don't know. You know, he looked pretty dead, but is there a chance that he could still be able to inject Armin and then have him, like, eat a Titan, want to get the Titan powers?
Oh.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, but I think Armin's toast. I do believe that you have a plausible point that could happen.
Yeah, because to me that was like, I couldn't believe it either. That I would have been probably just as surprised if Aaron had died.
I would have been pretty shocked if Aaron died too.
Yeah,
Like, it would have been like, what? Especially since, like, there aren't a whole lot of good guys that have shown the Titan power. So it's like, to even keep the story going, he's got to be in a good position, you know? Or at least a somewhat tenable position.
Right, because he's really the only good guy Titan that you can root for. You're right, at this point.
Yeah, like, all the other Titans seem like dicks, like, and no one, like, well, like you said, like, because they did specifically bring up juice there, Levi brought up the juice after he took on the Beast Titan, and, yeah, I would think that that's going to be some type of a plot point moving forward, so I would also maybe speculate that Irvin is maybe not dead.
Yeah, that's probably, I would go along with that as well.
Yeah, I would vote for him as a number two to get the Titan juice. Like, they kind of see him, like, barely hanging on to life in the battlefield, and, you know, he gets the old,
Yeah, my question is, though, how much of that syringe does he need to use in order to, like, be effective? Because if I remember, Rod Rice, or whatever his name was, like, was trying to inject Historia to turn her into a Titan to be able to get the, you know, the founding Titan or the coordinate or whatever. But he, when that failed, was able to just, like, lick the juice to turn into a Titan.
I would have to say...
wasn't a full syringe there.
No, but I would definitely say that there are some consequences from him just licking it up. I mean, he did drag his face off as he walked towards the village, or walked towards whichever wall he was going towards.
Yeah, I guess I never put that together. Like, that could have been a kind of, you know, obviously there was something wrong with his Titan form.
Yeah, my argument would always be that it was because he did not get the proper amount of juice. Because most people have been able to, you know, transform into at least... because even, like, that quadruped Titan that they have now... you know, it kind of keeps itself upright. Like, even the wildest running Titans kind of tend to keep themselves upright. Like,
well, yeah, at the very least not dragging themselves on the ground as they're trying to move around. Yeah. So, yeah, obviously something was wrong with the Rod Rice Titan form. So I think that makes sense.
I say you need to go full dose.
Something that they never really explained, it seemed like he was really, like, adamant about him not becoming a Titan for some reason. So I was thinking maybe that was, like, there was something wrong with his Titan form that he knew about already. But that doesn't quite make sense with the theory, because he wouldn't be able to, like, turn back from being a Titan unless he had the, you know, Titan power, it seems like. Because, like, the other people who just get turned into Titans seem like they're stuck that way. Unless they have that Titan shifting power.
Yeah, and there's really only a handful that are kind of in that Aaron, like, and Aaron does seem to be, like, a fully functional Titan, you know, form shifter at this juncture.
He seems to be as good as just about anybody, from what we could tell.
Yeah,
his training with Hanji probably has helped out somewhat, I'd say.
Yeah, I would say that it's something that you kind of missed, but I feel like on screen, but his improvement in the battlefield tactics was much improved this time around.
And I think he did mention that Annie was a much better fighter than, what's his name? Why can't I remember the armored Titan's name?
Reiner,
yeah. He was a not as good a fighter as Annie was, I believe. They made a point to mention.
Because, I mean, Aaron did almost have him out one time previously, and Aaron was still a little kind of undisciplined at a minimum.
Yeah, for sure. his hardening abilities, it's gotten much better. That come out wrong, but
I think if people watch the show, they know what's what that means.
Yeah, if you haven't watched the show, give it
yeah.
a go.
Yeah, give it a go. Get some context to
it is interesting
to that statement.
The you know, we talked about a little bit about the villains and like how Aaron is really the only good guy Titan, but I would say that even the villains are given kind of you know, full characterization. Like you feel like you can kind of feel for that. You almost feel bad for the villains, and sometimes.
Yeah, the shape shifting ones.
Because of how they feel like, you know, they basically have to like pretend to be something they're not and try to, you know, and they're at the same time like becoming friends with the people that they're supposedly at war against. So it's stressful mentally, I think, for them.
Yeah.
So it's a strange kind of place to be in as an audience member.
Because the, yeah, I mean, even in this past episode, well, even when Armin was dying, honestly, because Berthold was that guy. He's just like, oh, God damn it, man. Are you really going to do this? Like, he didn't really want Armin to put himself in danger just to give Aaron the opening is a human to take him down.
Yeah.
You know, and it was kind of an ingenious plan. He uses the, like you said, the hardening ability and plugs the wall and then, you know, comes in with the ambush attack because he thinks he's out of it. I mean, it was like a genius plan.
Yeah, I mean, it worked really well, too.
And they took down Rhina, too, which, I mean, that was the only positive note, was that Hanji didn't die.
Oh, yeah, that was a bummer, too. I thought that she maybe was going to, that was going to be the end of her. But I could have seen that happening more than I could have seen Armin happening, I feel like.
I
was still glad,
like,
to see that she wasn't dead.
Yeah, I was bummed that she was done, but like when I saw Armin die, like I'm like, oh, like I was almost ready to cry. Like it was almost Avengers Endgame all over again.
Right.
Like that is where I was with Armin dying.
It was pretty intense because I was like watching. I'm like, oh no, he's gonna be okay. He's gonna be okay.
Yeah, that's him.
It's like, oh, no, he's not going to be okay. He's, like, getting burned up to a crisp.
Yeah, like, I was definitely hanging in there myself for quite some time, and then when it dawned on me, and then the scene kept on going, I'm like, oh, why are you doing this to me?
Yeah, that was rough stuff, I gotta say. But, yeah. There's a couple more episodes left, I think, so that should be an interesting end of the season. I feel like this season has kind of got me back on board more than the second season at times.
I do feel like I read somewhere that this studio isn't going to do any more Attack on Titan episodes.
Hmm.
That they're having some problem. But I'll have to look to see if that's true or not. Because I'll be really bummed. Like, yeah, that second season was trash because they were still having some type of animator strike or something, I believe, at the time.
I can believe that, yeah.
So, yeah, I hope the episodes continue after this one because after that second season, it's been pretty lights out.
Yeah.
I've been really invested, and I mean, it has been kind of cool too. Like the last two episodes have been the only episodes so far in the season that the Titans were really involved that much. Like they had a lot of human character development stuff going on early in this season,
yeah,
which kind of helps bring you in and makes you feel even more when people die, you sons of bitches.
Yeah, that's the way they get you, Kevin. To pull on those heartstrings. But yeah, it's a good show. I don't know what made me think to start looking at that again, but I started watching it, and then had to keep finishing, you know, keep going until I basically caught up with the rest of it that night. So, it's binge worthy, I guess that's what I'm saying. Isn't that what people say?
Yes.
Okay.
I do believe they say that. My wife is interested in our first planned topic of the night, Ken.
Oh, yeah.
She does want to plant certain flowers to help aid the butterflies.
Okay. Yes, that is our second, or our, well, I don't know what number topic this would be, but yeah, butterflies, especially these monarch butterflies, are migrating around this time of year, I believe, right, Kevin?
Yes, they are, Ken, I believe.
Anyway, we do know that they migrate at a certain time of year.
Yeah, because they weren't very clear. Like, I feel like we see monarch butterflies because they migrate south to Mexico or coastal California. So that's quite a migration if they're leaving from here to Cali or Mexico.
Yeah.
It's quite a trip.
And those butterflies that migrate have never made that journey before. Like, there will be generations that are live and die between the time when they need to migrate. It's always kind of a weird idea that, you know, butterfly would be born and die, and then their offspring would be born knowing where to go in Mexico to this, you know, area where all the monarch butterflies go to.
Yeah, they don't have a traditional, like, learning system. Like,
I don't think they go to, like, butterfly school, yeah.
Well, you know, I'm just thinking, like, a lion always teaches their young what to do. You know, like, a lot of species kind of teach their youth what to do, and then they move along. Like, even insects, I feel like there's kind of a learned behavior before the next one dies.
I mean, we may, you know, I don't know if we've covered this sort of topic, but it seems like something we would have at some point mentioned. Does a butterfly even remember what it did as a caterpillar? I mean, that's a whole other wrinkle into this whole question here. Like, when would they be learning this information about the migratory path that they're supposed to take? Because their whole body is reformed, Kevin. From the time they're born.
That is a very good question that was not addressed at all in this article.
No, doesn't mean I'm not going to ask it, but this article in particular dealt with what happens when butterflies are born in captivity. You know, there's commercial growers, Kevin, who are raising monarch butterflies.
Yeah, they said that within the past decade, the monarch butterfly population has dropped by 80%.
Hmm.
So people are trying to help restock the butterfly situation. But they may not be helping with these transient butterfly
breeds. What they're finding is that the butterflies that were not raised outdoors are not knowing how to actually migrate. They're just traveling in random directions instead of moving south to where they need to go to you know, avoid the cold weather. So that is a very odd thing, you know, to start with, because like I said, it's like these butterflies are not, you know, it's not, there isn't like a tradition that's being passed on that we can tell, right? That's being interrupted by butterflies being raised indoors, right? They're not hearing about these migration paths. You know,
yeah,
they're being cut off from their ancestral knowledge or something. No, because the butterflies are being born not having made that migration, and then somehow, if they're, you know, living their lives in the wild, they're able to make that migration. And if they are raised indoors in a, you know, a facility, then, like I said, they just sort of wander off aimlessly.
And people seem to be pretty into it, in that labs that were testing this, they talked that, I guess some of the breeders, they actually try to mimic, you know, daylight and everything, and try to give them a lot of space to roam. So, like, they try to create natural conditions.
Right.
So it isn't even like, you know, they're just raising them in a box or something like that.
Yeah, or it doesn't sound like it's just under fluorescent lights all the time or anything. They're trying to make it more natural, but it's still not able to do the trick, I guess.
Yeah, and it was even more interesting that they were, some of the researchers were so concerned that this butterfly was going to die because of a cold snap that was coming through. They brought butterflies that had been outdoor. You know, they had been born outdoors. They had at least been raised a little bit outdoors. And then they brought them inside for 3 to 4 days. And that they had problems migrating.
Yeah.
So there is, like, something about even taking... And A, I was kind of just interested that they can tag butterflies. Like, it's one of those things that seems kind of wild to me. You know, like, how does that happen exactly? Like, when you see a tag on a, you know, a fish or, you know, a shark or something like that, you can kind of understand what's going on. Like, how do you do that to a butterfly?
Well, I would say very carefully. Because they're quite delicate. So it would also have to be made out of something light, I would think. Because they are very light. So any additional weight would be a huge kind of like percentage-wise shift for them. So, I don't know. Maybe something very lightweight, but waterproof, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really small homing device. Well, maybe not homing devices, right?
But... it might just be, even if they're tagged, that they can just kind of look and... But, yeah, you're right. It would be hard to find, like, one particular butterfly if they're all kind of congregated together. which I think is how they're living down in Mexico, if I'm remembering my other pictures I've seen. But I don't know. Somehow they do it, Kevin.
Yeah, so I mean, it's pretty crazy that those ones, they tagged them, but even those ones couldn't find their way on a proper migration from just, and they think that it had something to do with even being indoors for as little time as they were.
Yeah.
Since they had been raised outside. So, I mean, that's kind of something else that's pretty wild about this one, is that it is really all about the natural conditions.
And, you know, it's some kind of subtle interaction between the natural conditions, almost, it seems, that kind of ends up producing this migration behavior. Because it's not something that they can kind of... some simple variable. It seems like an interaction between different things somehow that they're not able to kind of pinpoint. But it just, I guess, says that this migration behavior is really a delicate thing. And I guess, you know, with the climate changing can be throwing things off too, because they're saying a lot of the butterflies are not coming back north, maybe, or...
Yeah, they're enjoying the warmer conditions. And they also mentioned that other monarch butterflies that have started to pop up, because A, they are mostly in North America to start with,
mm-hmm.
but they have migrated to other continents at this point, because they said they're in Europe.
Yes.
And that there are different variations of the monarch butterflies in these other locations, but none of them migrate.
Yeah, that's true.
Like this particular breed in the U.S. happens to be one of the few migrators amongst the butterflies, it would seem, which kind of makes it extra unique, and maybe why one of the people, because that's what I was kind of wondering about. They're talking about how the home raised ones wouldn't help, but wouldn't that just, well, they were worried that releasing them still might cause the not being able to fly south gene, like it might kill it.
That seems a little alarmist to me.
Well, they did say that they needed to study it more.
Right. Because, like I said, if you could be born, you know, it doesn't seem like there was some genetic change that's happening. It's more like some kind of environmental factor that's, you know, either not causing an instinct to kick in, basically.
Yeah, and I do feel like the article kind of was leaning that way.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it is more an environmental thing, which is why even the outdoor ones couldn't kind of find their way. Like, it was something about bringing them in. But, I mean, I guess I wonder at what temperature they freeze.
I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I guess that, and it's not something that they really address in the article either.
It's just one of those weird situations where, you know, trying to help actually doesn't seem like it's going to be much help.
Yeah, it just seems like to go the wife route here. Just plant stuff to try and help the butterfly population.
Yes, that actually would help, I would say, Kevin, yeah.
So plant some extra flowers that will attract these great insects.
Try to keep these wild butterflies still moving along out there. Give them enough stuff to eat.
Yeah, I mean, I am giving the deer that lives back in the woods my lawn clippings to eat. It has now come into the yard and eaten grass directly after I mowed two consecutive times now. Helping feed the wildlife, Ken.
Wow.
I think it also ate my tomatoes. I was not very happy about that.
Yeah, that would probably, that would make sense. That unfortunately. Kind of yeah.
Not cool, man. Not cool, deer. I don't think it was any of the rodents that are more quadruped.
You don't think nature. Like a raccoon would have? I've heard raccoons can eat tomatoes too.
No, it was just the very top of the plant.
Mm.
It appeared it was attacked from above, and there's a deck right behind it with a fence line. So nothing can, something can get under it, but it would have had to have like squeezed under the fence to get to it. And it doesn't seem like that'd be a comfortable way to.
It's not your neighbor's deck?
No, it's mine.
Okay. I was going to say your neighbors could have been reaching over and, you know, helping themselves to some tomatoes, but.
No,
that wouldn't be very neighborly.
They do not have a deck out back. I think they converted their sunroom at some point to just another part of the house.
Gotcha.
And I'm just throwing it out there that it might be a good idea to convert that at some point.
Stay tuned, listeners.
As nice as that is.
We will be sure to update you if there's any news on that front.
Well, Ken, our neighbors to the north in Canada...
Oh, right.
Have a
speaking of neighbors, Kevin.
Fine story for us. You would have sworn that this maybe was a Florida story, maybe an England story, but no. Our good friends up north there in Canada bring us that an Air Canada passenger traveling to Toronto from Quebec City found herself stranded alone on the tarmac. In the dark, in what she described as a nightmare.
Yeah. This is a crazy story.
Yeah, because I should have probably looked this up before the show here, but I can't think that that is a long flight.
Oh, right. I don't know.
Because I feel like I reasonably thought that I could drive up there to watch hockey.
Oh, right. Yeah, I would say if you drove from Columbus, it's somewhere around 6 hours, 6 to 8 hours maybe to get to Toronto. So it's not crazy far. Where was the flight from?
I'm looking it up here now on oh, come on, man. You're killing me.
But, yeah, she got to the airport. Apparently was still sleeping when the plane landed.
Right.
But then woke up freezing cold and surrounded by complete darkness. So, yeah, that would be kind of scary, I gotta say. Like, it said, later in the article, she said that she was having trouble sleeping and having kind of PTSD-like symptoms almost. It sounded like, as a result of this incident. And I don't know. Oh, she went from Quebec to Toronto.
Right.
So I'm not sure how far that is, to be honest. But it doesn't seem like
that. Oh, come on.
Because Quebec is on the eastern half of the country somewhere.
Yeah, that, well, like I said, like, I feel like I was just like, oh,
could
I
could that be almost, like, from New York to Chicago or something like that?
I was like, I could almost drive that. Yeah, I'm just, maps is better than trying to, I stumbled into trying to look for a flight, and that was a,
oh, no. They got you.
Yeah.
Trying to suck you up into all kinds of crap, probably. But, that,
because I guess that was part of it. I'm like, man, that is not that long of a flight. Like, how hard were you asleep?
I have questions about that, yes. because I...
Yeah, it's an hour and a half flight.
Oh, okay.
Like,
yeah, that's not that far.
Like, what were you doing that you were that... Like, I can't imagine... Even on the smoothest landings that I've had on a flight, I can't imagine, and I sleep like a rock. I can't imagine not being woken up by a land.
Oh, well, that's what I was going to say, too. Like, I don't think I've ever slept through a landing on a plane. I mean, I've just never slept that well on a plane to start with, I guess. I'm always sort of like half awake,
I feel like. Yeah, as much as I could, and I do feel like I can fall asleep just about anywhere, planes are not one of the, like, I do occasionally sleep on planes, but it is not very frequent. Like, it's got to be either a late night or a really long flight. Like, the one back from Hawaii, I feel like I slept on. And the ones to and from Europe, I might have slept on a little bit.
Yeah, I've never been on a flight quite that long. I've gone, you know, from West Coast to East Coast. And I've slept on those flights, but still, I have a hard time thinking that I would ever be that far asleep that I wouldn't wake up for the landing.
Yeah, that I have questions about that part. And I would be kind of interested to see if, like, were the crew complete dicks and didn't wake her up at all?
Well, okay, I think that goes beyond being a dick, really. If you're going to go to the point where you're just going to leave her locked, you know, because she was locked into this airplane.
Into the plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With no power. Her phone died shortly after landing. She was able to text her friend that she was locked in the plane.
And really, her friend was the only... The friend was the savior because she'd never really got anyone's attention. She did find her way to the cockpit and was flashing an SOS and then found a way to open the door. But I'm not surprised. Like, even in a natural state, the drop from a plane to the tarmac is a pretty long one that I personally would not want to take. And I do not blame her for you know, deciding to wait this thing out.
Yeah, in the dark would not be great either. Just saying.
Well, at least you would know where you are at that point.
Yeah.
I could definitely see waking up and completely freaking out.
Yes, not knowing where you are.
Not knowing where you are. You're in the dark. Like you said, it's cold. Like, yeah. Woman seems dead to the world because she slept through a landing.
Yeah, maybe she took a sleeping pill or something. I don't know. It's possible.
You know, I don't know how hard these... I guess the answer is always going to be they didn't try hard enough. I don't know how you deal with that. Like, do you just talk to someone at the home office and go, hey, this person was so out of it, we couldn't even get them up. What should we do?
Well, yes. Whatever they should do, the answer cannot be leave them there and just close the door and turn the lights off.
They did not do enough. Period. End of sentence.
You would have to call like some kind of medical personnel, I would think. Like if it got to the point where you were not able to
revive her.
Revive someone, yeah. But I feel like they didn't even get that far, Kevin. Like, to me, if they knew she was on there and asleep, like, they would not have left her on there. Like, somehow they didn't know that she was still in her seat. And they're supposed to be, like, going through the seats and, like, cleaning stuff up, I think, right? After everyone gets off. So I don't know if they were just like, oh, screw it. I can't even deal with this. I'm going home. And somebody didn't, like, go through and check all the seats. That's the only way I could really see it happening. Or she was a stowaway somehow. And snuck on board. Was like...
I feel like... Because you just posted this story this week. Like, I want more to this story. You know, I still have some outstanding... Like... That would be a crazy twist if it ended up that she was a stowaway and she's just trying to bilk money out of Air Canada.
Yeah, I mean, because...
Wouldn't that be a way to get some quick free money?
No, I don't know. Is it that quick? I mean, it's pretty involved, it sounds like to me. But,
well, I mean, Air Canada already apologized for the incident and they've been in contact with this woman. So they are, it would seem to me, ahead of the curve in trying to prevent a lawsuit.
Yeah, it sounds like somebody didn't do their job right to me.
Yeah, I feel, well, and now that you bring up the cleaning, like... Yeah, I mean, that's kind of crazy, like, to get to the point where, like, and if you did clean the whole thing and still left her in there, it's just like, how did you, like, again, like, it's only an hour and a half flight, like, how out of it was she? You know, like, how long does it take to clean the plane and to, like, your point's right, like, you know, maybe they just, but it would be kind of weird. Like, either someone didn't clean at all and just kind of left the plane and locked it up, which is one kind of weird.
Yeah, that's my most likely scenario.
And the other one is she was so out of it, they cleaned and they still couldn't get her up. And
that one is hard for me to go with because I just feel like they would not be like, oh, well, and
just leave her there.
Like, that seems like a next level of kind of incompetence or...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's because
it's bad enough not to clean up, you know?
I was going to say, don't you get in trouble more for not doing your job and leaving her there instead of at least doing your job of cleaning the plane and still not being able to get her up for some reason or another?
Well, I feel like you could be fired for either reason, really. Because part of your job should be to clean the plane.
Right. It
should be somebody's job, anyway.
Yeah, I don't know whose job it is. It might not have been any of the flight staff in particular.
But whoever's job it is should also be, you know, working for the airline, trying to, like, be some part of the customer, you know, experience. Which I think would involve not locking them on a plane. So, yeah. Even if it wasn't the flight crew, whoever it was that should have been cleaning, I think, bears responsibility for not getting them out of there. And to me, that would be a little bit worse even, because that'd be like a total, like, I don't know. To me, it's like a total lack of any kind of, like, I hate to say common sense, but, like, you should know not to leave somebody by themselves on a plane. I feel like.
I just feel like there's a lot that can go wrong there. Like, I mean, what if she got destructive on the plane for some reason or another?
Yeah, or just was like, hey, let's turn this baby on and see what happens. I don't know. Like, yeah. Maybe the pilot takes the keys. I hope, anyway. But, you know, you never know. Anything weird could happen.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff. And, I mean, they got really lucky that something worse didn't happen with the person. Because, again, like, I completely, like, whatever's coming her way should be going her way, in my opinion. Like, I guess this, unless they do find out that she was on, like, a heavy dose of pills, which might be kind of hard to prove at this point.
Right. Well, see, to me, even though in that situation, they should still have done something. Like, if she was unresponsive, they could have called, like, a doctor or an ambulance or something.
Yeah, I feel like, again, like, something more could have been done just in general.
Yes, I think we can all agree on that.
Oh, man.
But, Kevin,
you know, I don't know if anyone can do more to put their trust in Bitcoin, Ken. This nice fellow named Didi Taihutu.
Yes, very good, Kevin. I think that's right. A 41-year-old gentleman.
Yes, so he is in our age bracket. And him and his family have gone cryptocurrency only for the most part.
Yeah, it would be fair to say that he's a Bitcoin fanatic, I think, Kevin. Seemingly, his bought into the entire philosophy surrounding Bitcoin.
Yeah,
and,
like,
has devoted his life to it in a way.
I can't believe I told idiot intern that there is no way that people just sell computers that help create Bitcoin. I'm like, why wouldn't they just run them themselves? If that happened, but evidently, people do actually do that?
Yeah, the computers do cost, you know, electricity to run, I suppose.
Right. But, I mean, I would think that if it makes you money with 10 of them, why wouldn't you have 20 of them, and then when that starts turning a profit, get 30 of them? Like, just keep on growing, like, I would think that you could cover your electric bill at that point. Like, if you can cover it with 10, can't you just, you know, just expand into a commercial space? And
well, we can get a little geeky here probably, because if you the way people mined Bitcoin a lot of times is that they would join a pool of miners, and basically because it was very hard to kind of perform the operations that you need to in order to find the Bitcoin. It's like you're basically looking for a really long number that when you plug it into an equation, is going to give you a bunch of zeros back, but it's a really complicated equation and it's hard to come up with a number. So
okay.
These computers are out there trying to do that. And to increase the chance of getting anything back, you have these kind of mining cooperatives where people will share the reward, right? So if one person in that cooperative wins the reward, then everybody gets a share based on like how much they're basically kicking in terms of processing power. So it like gets split out among everybody.
Okay.
But all this to say, like, there comes a point where what you're spending on mining the Bitcoin might not be actually worth your while based on what you're getting back. So like people will like monitor the price of Bitcoin and kind of adjust their spending and things like that. If you really want to get all into it, I guess this is the sort of things that people pay attention to.
Yeah, well, I guess he should have bought those. I would imagine though that he was not well. Nah, he wasn't very tech savvy for being one of the younger kids. was not terribly tech savvy.
And that's not to say that there weren't also people out there selling crap, you know, to rip people off, saying that they're Bitcoin mining, you know, rigs that really aren't worth what you're paying for, you know. So it, who knows? But I can remember the days when Bitcoin, I feel like when I was first aware of Bitcoin, I did buy some. I want to say when Bitcoin was around $70 per one Bitcoin.
Oh, wow.
And I do kind of wish that I had at least, say, bought, you know, a Bitcoin and left it hanging around. But at that time, $70 was not something that I was just leaving hanging around anywhere for no reason. But if I had, Kevin, Bitcoin at one point was up to $20,000 per one Bitcoin. That would have been quite a return on investment
if I could have
pulled that off.
I mean, and that's kind of crazy because Taihutu here bought when it was around $1,000. So I mean, if you saw it at $70, you got in well before Mr. Taihutu here. Eventually that'll roll off the tongue.
Yeah,
I don't think
you can just
it will.
Call him Didi if you like for short.
Yeah, maybe Didi's the way to go.
I mean, we did read this whole article about him. I kind of feel like we're on a first-name basis now.
It's a lot easier to type that than to say it into a microphone. We're going first name, bitches. But
so he did buy in at, what, it was $1,000?
Yeah, and I guess I had heard about, you know, maybe Bitcoin not being the future, but I guess I didn't realize that it had roared back to, well, 19,000, not quite 20,000, Ken.
Oh.
But still.
Now, what's it currently at?
Around 7,000.
Oh, 7,000 right now?
Yes.
Oof.
That's still quite a return on your investment, even if you sold it right now.
Yeah, if he came in at 1,000, he still would have made seven times what he started with, so that's not terrible for Didi, even in this situation. But I feel like they ask him in the article how he feels about having not sold when it was at the high, you know, when it was around $20,000 per Bitcoin.
Oh yeah.
And you know, he is, you can tell that he is regretful on some level. But
yeah, he did say that he sold some at that point.
Yeah.
Because I think it'd be silly not to sell at least some. Because, I mean, he does have to pay for stuff still.
Right.
But it is kind of crazy. Just like, I feel like we read a lot of these articles where these people, and maybe I've started to listen to some more, maybe I might call them smart podcasts, where they're breaking down like online culture and everything now, other things like Radiolab, where they're trying to teach you something while you're listening rather than just being a I mean, I listen to a lot of comedy stuff, so I'll admit the learning stuff being a little bit of a departure. But, you know, this guy is out. He wrote a book about, because him and his family did this. Yeah. And that's what was one of the things that really the article concentrated on, was the fact that most of the people that do this are in their 20s.
Tech bro types, seemingly.
Tech bro types.
But this guy was, like we said, in his 40s, and he had a wife and two kids, I think.
And he said he'd been running a business for 15 years
prior
to that. So, I mean, he got in on the business level pretty early there. I mean, if he's only 41, that's 26 that he owned a business.
Yeah, he seemed like a kind of an entrepreneurial personality, always kind of going on to the next thing. And he really settled on this Bitcoin thing. And it seemed like it maybe his father dying had something to do with him deciding to kind of sell his house and all his assets and put it all into Bitcoin. Everything
is
in Bitcoin.
Yeah, because he couldn't save his dad from cancer. And it's just like, yeah, that kind of happens sometimes.
I mean, I don't know if that's a solid reason to convert all of your currency to Bitcoin or not, but...
I am not ready to liquidate my house and sell it for Bitcoin. Nor am I, because this is also an appropriate subject to ask about how this idea floated with his wife and three children.
Seemingly, she was okay with this one. It sounded like he came up with a lot of crazy ideas that she was not okay with. So I don't know if that maybe just sort of like moved the window of possibilities over far enough that eventually she was just like, okay, finally, something that's like not completely, well, it's still insane maybe, but, you know, not like living in a Mars colony or something, whatever, what other ideas he came up with. Just imagining, and I'm sorry, Dee Dee, if you're listening, it just sounded like you came up with some crazy ideas. I don't know.
Yep. Every time I tweet out an article, the person that it's about hits us up on the socials.
That's been pretty consistent for you.
Yeah. It's been quite a source of traffic.
Okay. Well, that's good. Sorry, Dee Dee.
It gets me some scores on ye old Twitter.
Well, maybe I can stop him from preemptively. I'll let him know that we're sorry in advance, so he won't hit you up this time, maybe. We'll see.
So, I mean, the guy does make some money off of kind of being a family man, but,
tech
bro.
Not a wife guy, though, just to kind of follow up from our last
He episode. Is definitely not a wife guy.
He does have a wife, but he's not a wife guy. So I think we're just to further categorize what a wife guy is and what is not. we can put him firmly outside of that circle of the Venn diagram.
I agree.
Definitely a Bitcoin guy.
I guess it was kind of interesting that, because they didn't really say he was living in a park in the Netherlands, like after he sold his house. And I guess he got so much attention in the Netherlands. He must have been from Indonesia originally, or at least his lineage was from there.
Yes. So he ended up moving back to kind of connect with his roots, he said, and to kind of see how other people live in the world, I guess. He was kind of feeling a little disconnected from it all, living his modern lifestyle. So that sounded a little bit like they were, I don't know if roughing it is the right word, but maybe doing without certain luxuries, it sounded like. And, I mean, this would be... I don't understand the draw, I gotta say, Kevin. Does it bother you in any way to know that you're using, you know, U.S. currency when you're out buying goods and services in your day-to-day life?
Oh.
Are you ever like, gosh darn it, I wish that I didn't have to rely on the United States of America to full faith and trust to back up this currency. You know, is that ever going through your mind?
I have used plastic for so long at this point.
Right.
That, like, I don't feel like I use currency. Like, it went from just, like, because, I mean, I remember getting a credit card when I first went to, it was kind of hard to write checks. And this is how old we are. When I first got to Kent State, it was hard to write out-of-state checks. Mm. It became easier to leave all my lawn-making money in the bank, and my dad would just take it out when I charged stuff to my credit card and paid it.
Interesting. So this was a money laundering scheme you're describing.
No, I earned the money.
Okay, all right.
Paid for my school supplies with it. That does not seem like laundering.
I get it. It's all good.
Seems like the good old fashioned American entrepreneurial spirit, good sir. running a business.
Yeah. No, I saw something like this on Breaking Bad, so I'm kind of familiar with the process. Oh, damn it. Well.
But,
I forgot what we were even talking about.
We were talking about wanting to divest from the world.
Oh, yes.
You know, it doesn't bother me to use U.S. currency or, like, you know, when I was in Europe traveling around, like, it's whatever. Like, someone has the currency. Like, it isn't, even the cryptocurrency isn't your currency. You know what I mean? Like, isn't that the biggest ego trip, is you want your own currency? But the cryptocurrency isn't anyone's current, you know, it's not really your currency.
I see. I guess maybe I'm not understanding his full reasoning here. And they probably didn't do a very good job explaining it in the article. What exactly it is that is the draw. Because the other people as well who are, you know, going to places like Thailand, apparently there's like six businesses in the city where he's living where they actually accept Bitcoin directly.
Right.
Without having to convert it to some other currency, which is, I guess, icky for him.
Oh, that's what it was. I was talking about credit cards. Like, I guess I don't, and I was going through my history. Like, I don't feel like I use U.S. currency that much. Like, I guess that's why it doesn't bother me. Like, in the world has come more to credit cards anyway.
Well, no, but you're still using U.S. dollars.
Yeah, I'm still using U.S. dollars, but I guess I don't think about it because I'm not using a physical dollar that frequently. It's nearly as frequently as I was back in the Ron's Lawn Service days. Then it was almost always a cash business. But, I mean, it was only at school that was it became a hurdle.
The real target market for Bitcoin is the people who, for whatever reason, it's a problem for them to know that the U.S. government is involved with their money.
Yeah, or any government.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, I guess it just doesn't bother me that much to be that wrapped. To be wrapped up in it in and of to the point that, you know, you divest of everything that you have.
And you have to deal with the downside of Bitcoin, which is like the volatility and like how much it goes up and down all the time. Like,
yeah, but
it can really mess with
your
net worth, you know.
But he was on a cruise where he was a speaker.
Right.
Like, I guess that's the other thing. Like, and I mean, you can definitely tell it even from professional wrestling. Like, all of these kind of small communities that have formed themselves that kind of self-sustain themselves. Like, they have their own little ecosystem.
The flat earthers?
Yeah. Like, even stuff like that. Like, there's enough of them that, you know, they can, and goddamn, man. There was one wrestler that I don't know if he was being serious or not on Chris Jericho's podcast today.
Oh, really?
Or yesterday. He's just like, I don't know. I've never been to outer space. the people are pretty convincing. I'm just like, I hope that you're just trying to be an asshole. Like, I'm just going to pretend you're not this stupid. Like,
yeah, is it that, you know, trying to get people, sometimes trying to get people upset can be a good way to drive attention and, you know, get impressions out there. Unfortunately, Kevin, that seems to be taking advantage of that human wiring.
Yeah, that's the other reason for withdrawal. The level of outrage is not commensurate to what is actually happening more times than not.
Yeah. It is unfortunate that there's people out there seemingly willing to believe that the Earth is flat, but like getting upset and yelling about it probably doesn't help. I mean, maybe talking calmly to people could sometimes help. I don't even know if that works. So
no, like, I mean, it's just another one where I'm just, no, I, like, I'm done having that. You know, I mean, they probably had that discussion a million times at this juncture. And like you said, like, there are easy physical ways to find this out, and they don't take the clues even when they're right in front of them. But anyway, the Bitcoin people seem, and the people, because I didn't even quite get into it, what blockchain is. Is that part of the Bitcoin thing?
Yes. So that is the process that is used to kind of verify the Bitcoin ledger, which is just sort of like the big sheet that keeps track of like who paid who, like who has what money. So it's like everybody works together to keep that record list going.
Oh.
And the blockchain is like each step of the way, it gets encrypted in a way to show that it was like a truly authorized transaction. And then it gets encrypted again when the next transaction happens. So each like kind of step in that encryption process is kind of like a, in my mind, that's what's the blockchain.
Oh, okay.
Is each step being encrypted kind of on top of each other, which makes it so that it's hard to fake, because you would have to take all those, like each step is kind of computationally complex if you're trying to fake it. So all the whole records all through all time kind of makes it hard to fake
gotcha, you
know, a lot of stuff. So
yeah, but I mean, he seems like he's in a self-sustaining community, you know, like it seems
the other thing, sorry, I wanted to say is that there's other
popular enough, because the blockchain group was kind of what they were talking about too.
And there's other like virtual coin that use this blockchain technology out there, you know, that are kind of, they use different, slightly different rules, like on maybe mining the coins or how different, you know, they tweak different variables that Bitcoin has set up.
Yeah, because isn't Facebook going to get into the Bitcoin game?
I think they're going to be making their own coin, yeah.
Yeah, which I can't believe they didn't make that to pay for Farmville a long time ago.
Yeah.
What were they waiting for?
So, yeah, that's a big piece of news. So, I mean, another reason to think, like, even if you are someone who has a problem with government-controlled coins and currency, you may not necessarily want to go all in on Bitcoin even then, just because it's not the only game in town. You could still believe in that, you know, virtual currency without necessarily going for Bitcoin, I guess. So hopefully things work out okay for this guy, but I don't know.
Yeah, it seems pretty crazy to me. Like, I don't want to go that route. Like, I have no desire. Like, I guess investing in something that it seems worth it just to have as a backup with maybe, I guess it'd be stable if there's some world war, but it doesn't seem like we're on the brink of a world war, honestly.
Yeah, who knows, but
there might be a war, but I don't think there's going to be a world war.
But you bring up a good point with Facebook getting into this area now too, and them having such a large market share, if they can kind of turn any percentage of their customers into the users that they're whatever new coin they come out with, I feel like that's going to give them a big advantage in terms of being a valuable currency, you know. I think the rap that Bitcoin has come under is more like an investment than a currency. Like, nobody really, except for people like this guy, Didi, but the vast majority of people do not actually use it to pay for things. Like, they're just getting in there to get invested, and then they'll cash out at some points, you know, or, you know, invest more money, what have you, but it's not really, they're not really using it as a currency.
Right.
So Facebook maybe has a chance to actually do that, just because of how many people users they have, I feel like. Because that's the problem Bitcoin has, is like, there's not enough people that use it. So, and people are like, why should I use it?
Oh yeah, why should I accept it?
Yeah,
because I mean, it was kind of funny. There were still some people that are like, nah, we're holding out on the whole credit card thing.
Right.
They've all fallen at this juncture. Because I remember Steak and Shake being one of those places that you couldn't do it for the longest time. And it's just like, oh, man, why do I need to have fucking real money for this, dude?
I feel like there's a place down on Main Street in Bexley where it's like this pizza place that's been open since the 50s. And I think that they still take only cash. Yeah, and that might be one of the only places that I'm aware of in 2019 that still...
Cash only,
exactly.
Oh, well, Ken, I'm going to assume you did not pay cash for your beer.
Oh, correct. I believe I used Samsung Pay on my phone, to be honest with you, Kevin.
Almost cryptocurrency. Yeah,
it still uses U.S. dollars at the bottom. It's turtles all the way down.
Well, it did pay for some Necron 99 from Three Floyds.
Mm.
This past year, I believe I posted on. Oh no, I don't think I posted about. Yeah, I posted about the food, and yeah, I posted about my stop at Three Floyds after All In in Chicago this past year. And, you know, it's definitely one of those breweries to me that they really seem to, I don't know how they do it, but almost all their beers they knock out of the park.
That's what I was going to say. I've really not had, I don't think, a bad beer from them. Now, I know I had a beer that wasn't my favorite beer, but I can't remember what that was called at this point. Maybe their Space Station Middle Finger. But regardless, my previous favorite beer of theirs was Alpha King, which I felt was a good one. But this might be has jumped ahead of that with this Necron 99.
Yeah, that's a tight race for me. As I mentioned to you, their Scottish style ale, Robert the Bruce, because of its non hoppiness mm-hmm. and its just general greatness and maltiness. It will always be my favorite there. But Necron 99 and the Alpha King, they're kind of neck and neck
mm-hmm.
To me. Like, they're both just excellent, excellent beers. And this one is named as such. It's 7.3% alcohol. For some reason, I thought it was 99 IBUs, but Untappd is only listing it as 61. But yeah. It just has a great, because I do think that there's a level of pininess that's acceptable to me in this one.
Hmm.
Like, it's very light, but it's definitely in there. But it's mostly a floral wonderland with just enough, bite in there to kind of make it stand out even more.
Yeah, it's not... It's definitely hoppy, but it's not, like, overpowering somehow. Usually the beers that I've drinking that are best able to balance that hoppiness have, like, a citrus kind of flavor to it to kind of counteract. Uh-oh. But you're right. This one's not really a citrus. It's, I guess, like a floral kind of flavor. But it's really good.
Yeah, so highly recommended. That is definitely a beer that more people will be able to get their hands on, as we noted, from Chicago. They have a pretty decent distribution area, and yeah, this is just in a bottle. Like, they only do, like, and that, I guess that's the other thing, is that they don't really distribute their crazy, you know, their one-off type stuff. They just distribute the stuff that they make consistently. And that's one of them. So, yeah, go out and enjoy that. This is at DeFrango 11. That's at Gozer 33. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you happen to listen to us. And have a good night.
See ya.